Now, one can scarcely look at television these days for a week or look through the programs without you getting a science fiction film on TV, isn't that so? And a lot of these science fiction films, and I looked at one the other day, only because it had a big build-up about Nostradamus, and I thought, so I just wonder what these guys are going to get to. And it was about a visit from aliens. And it's big news now in America that aliens are visiting the human race. In ancient days, they used to believe in elves and fairies and little hobgoblins and witches on brooms and things like that. But now in this sophisticated era, you know, we don't believe in those sort of funny looking things, you know, a witch with a broomstick and so on. It's ETs, you know, extraterrestrial beings, either coming like monsters or thin long fingers or little green men. And even from the smallest ages, we have the little guys, little Teletubbies with TV aerials on their heads and all. So the whole human race is being programmed for visits from outer space. And if you go into the fun arcades, you'll see hundreds of games where folks are sort of sitting and shooting down aliens. And this is all over the world. You can go to India too and you can be shooting down aliens. And if you put one of those virtual helmets on, you know, it's the real thing. You really think you're there. And Satan is programming the human race for visits from outer space and above all for his attack on the human race. And he wants to delude mankind in the final event that when Jesus Christ comes, he is an alien from outer space and we should shoot him down. And the beast will marshal the armies of the world to attack Christ. And everybody will think he's an alien. And that's in the book of Revelation. The book of the Bible, of course, speaks of many visits from outer space. But these aliens, as they're called nowadays, are referred to as angels. Alright? And Satan, who leads a group of evil angels in revolt to God. But this morning I don't want to talk about Satan. I want to talk about two archangels who stand in the presence of God, right there in his presence. Now we all know that we have guardian angels, each one at birth. When you die, your guardian angel is allocated to some other child. And they sort of take special care of us. Angels, as the Bible said, are ministering spirits sent forth to minister to those who shall be heirs of salvation. So right here in this room, you can be absolutely certain that there are many angels. And you must get used to the idea that angels follow us around, they minister and they protect us. Sometimes, you know, we do such silly things, we could be killed. And angels protect us, all right? They guide us, because we are like sheep that can fall into a ditch any day. So there are angel beings here, and one day we will see them and talk to them. Even though at the moment, we can't see any and can't hear them. They are here. You can't see the radio and TV waves going through this room. But they are going through this room, we know that. Because when you tune in correctly, you can pick them up. But angels are spirit beings. Just as surely as I'm standing here, they are here too. Alright? We must listen with amusement sometimes of the things we say. But I want to talk of two particular angels, archangels. When Moses was shown a pattern, he went up in the mountain, he was 40 days with God. God actually gave him a view of the heavenly throne and gave him dimensions, which he wrote down and so on, of how to make the Ark of the Covenant. And the Ark of the Covenant, you know, was about that size, the little size of this table. And inside was the law of God, the stones, and then it had a mercy seat. And on the two sides were two covering cherubs, and the Shekinah glory of God, representing God himself. Now, there was no image of God. It was just the Shekinah, the glorious light. There was these two angels, one on each side of the ark, shielding their faces so that they wouldn't actually look upon God. And they were made of solid gold. In Solomon's temple, which was big, these angels were olive trees plated with, you know, gold that had been hammered till they became sheets of gold. And they picked special trees, and their leaf branches were plated with gold. And these huge angels with 18 feet wingspans were in the temple of Solomon, two olive trees, plated, covered with gold. All right, they represent these two archangels. One's name is Gabriel, and the other's name is Michael. I want to talk about these two angels, all right? The archangel Gabriel, he's mentioned several times in the Bible. His name means warrior of God or man of God. He came to the father of John the Baptist, who was officiating as a priest in the temple in the lot of Abijah. And he told John the Baptist's father that his wife was going to have a child. You know the story well. Now, he was an old man, and she was old, well past bearing of eight children. They had prayed all their lives for a son, but it didn't seem to work out. And he said to him, he said that John, that's the child who's going to be born, shall be great in the sight of the Lord, and shall drink neither wine nor strong drink, and he shall be filled with the Holy Ghost even from his mother's womb. And many of the children of Israel shall he turn to the Lord their God. And he shall go before him, that's the Messiah, in the spirit and power of Elias, or Elijah, to turn the hearts of the fathers to the children. And Zechariah said to the angel, whereby shall I know this? For I am an old man, and my wife well stricken in years. And Gabriel knew that Zechariah didn't believe him, and he got angry. And there on the spur of the moment, he punished Zechariah. And the angel answering said, I am Gabriel. I stand in the presence of God, and I'm sent to speak unto thee and to show these things, these glad tidings. And behold, thou shalt be dumb and not able to speak until the day that these things shall be performed, because thou believest not my words. And he said, you're going to be dumb, boy, till it happens, because you didn't believe me. Gabriel then, some time later, he goes to visit the Virgin Mary. This is all in Luke chapter 1. In the sixth month, that's while Zechariah's wife was pregnant about 6 months, the angel Gabriel was sent from God to the city of Galilee named Nazareth to a virgin, espoused to a man whose name was Joseph. You know the story well. And the angel said to her, fear not, because she was absolutely terrified when she saw him. Fear not, Mary, for thou hast found favor with God. And behold, thou shalt conceive in thy womb, bring forth a son, and shalt call his name Jesus. And he shall be great, and he shall be called the Son of the Highest. And the Lord God shall give unto him the throne of his father David. And Mary said to the angel, now she didn't disbelieve him. Her response was quite totally different from Zechariah's. Zechariah thought, angel, no angel, he doesn't know what he's talking about. I don't believe it's possible. But Mary said, how shall this be, seeing I know not a man? How's this going to happen? So it wasn't disbelief, it was just curiosity to say, how is this going to happen? I haven't slept with any man yet. And the angel answered and said unto her, the Holy Ghost shall come upon thee, and the power of the Highest shall overshadow thee. Therefore also that holy thing which shall be born of thee shall be called the Son of God. first time ever it's ever happened. And Mary believed. She said, oh. And behold, thy cousin Elizabeth, she has also conceived a son in her old age, and this is the sixth month with her, who was called barren. For with God, nothing shall be impossible. So that's Gabriel's two mentions in the New Testament. One to a man who didn't believe him, but it happened anyway. And then to this young girl, the Virgin Mary, who was only probably a teenager, about the birth of Jesus Christ. In the Old Testament, Gabriel, he's mentioned again twice in the Old Testament. And this time to the prophet Daniel. In chapter 9, Daniel had been praying and confessing the sins of the people and repenting before God, as it were. And Daniel chapter 9, verse 20, and whilst I was speaking and praying and confessing my sin, Daniel talking, and the sin of my people Israel, and presenting my supplication before the Lord my God for the holy mountain of my God, yes, while I was speaking in prayer, even the man Gabriel, this word man of years indicates that angels are referred to as male, not females. They're not its. Alright? Sometimes you refer to a little baby, you don't know whether it's a male or a female. You say it, but then when it's born, and then everybody knows it's a boy or a girl, that you don't refer to them for very long as it. Angels are referred to as men or male. The man Gabriel, whom I have seen in the vision at the beginning, being caused to fly swiftly. You saw him in chapter 8, by the way, which I'll come to. He touched, being caused to fly swiftly means commanded by someone, take this message fast. He's commanded by higher authority to go quick. Touched me about the time of the evening oblation, and he informed me and talked to me and said, oh, Daniel, I am now come forth to give thee skill and understanding. He also said to Daniel, greatly beloved, like he had said to Mary, God is with thee. You're a greatly favored person. Because Gabriel and Michael stand in the presence of the God. They're not shuffle around the universe on minor missions. Other angels take little messages left, right, and center and do smaller and lesser important jobs. But these two are right there with God. They've traveled. God has a throne that's not fixed to one place. It moves around the universe. Ezekiel sees it. It moves like lightning anywhere around. These angels travel with God. They're in God's presence. But on this particular occasion, he sent down to Daniel, who is a captive, by the way, even though he's old. In Daniel chapter 8, we see Gabriel again. And in this place, Daniel hears a man talking. Not an angel, he hears a man. And he hears somebody else ask this person, how long is this prophecy going to last? I'm not going to talk on Daniel 8, my dear, because I've got a whole text on it. And then Gabriel is commanded by this higher being. If you're commanded by someone to do something, it implies that the person who gave the command is higher than you. And there's only one person higher than these angels, and that's God, or Son Christ. They're higher than Gabriel and Michael. So when either Gabriel or Michael is given a command, it implies that God is giving the command. Because you don't get a lesser angel saying, Gabriel, make him understand. You say, who are you to tell me what to do? I tell you. So this man commands Gabriel in chapter 8. Gabriel, make this man Daniel understand. Chapter 8, verse 13. One saint speaking, and another said unto him, the saint which spake, how long shall be the vision concerning the daily sacrifice to give both the sanctuary and the host to be trodden underfoot? And he said unto me, unto 2,300 days, then shall the sanctuary be cleansed. And it came to pass when I, even I, Daniel, had seen the vision and sought for the meaning, then behold, there stood before me the appearance of a man. You've seen this vision about the goat and the ram and all that. He sees this man standing in front of him. And I heard a man's voice between the banks of Ulai, which called and said, Gabriel, make this man, Daniel, to understand the vision. So this man who Daniel sees is not under Gabriel. He's above Gabriel. He is the Messiah. He's Christ before he was born in Bethlehem. He's the Son of Man. He's not another angel commanding Gabriel. I can assure you of that. So he, that's Gabriel, came near where I stood. All right. Oh no, the he in verse 17 could refer to the man himself. And when he came, I was afraid. I fell upon my face. He said unto me, understand, O Son of Man, for at the time of the end shall be the vision. So the 2,300-day prophecy was going to be fulfilled at the time of the end. Some churches teach that that's already started and finished in 1844, 150 years ago. But actually, Gabriel makes it quite clear here that this prophecy is for the time of the end. Now, as he was speaking with me, I was in a deep sleep. Once again, whether that's Gabriel speaking or the man speaking, I don't know. I was in a deep sleep on my face toward the ground, but he touched me and set me upright. And he said, behold, I will make thee know what shall be in the last end of the indignation. For at the time appointed, the end shall be. And then he tells him various facts in chapter 8 in Daniel. And Daniel wakes it down. And even after he's told, he doesn't understand. He's quite confused. But he writes down what he sees. And Paul says, don't worry. You're not going to be around at the time when it happens. Anyway. All right? So that's the two times in the Old Testament where Gabriel comes to Daniel. And twice in the New Testament where he comes to Zechariah, the father of John the Baptist, and to Mary, the Virgin Mary. That's the only four times Gabriel's mentioned in the Bible. The other archangel is Michael. All angels, you know, the Talmud talks of seven of them, ends with El, El, God. Gabriel, Michael, Cadmiel, various names. But in the Bible, there's only two names of archangels. Other than Satan, who was deposed, he was one of the original archangels. But he was put down. I think the other one was the Antichrist. He was thrown out. It's like the two sons of Aaron. Aaron had four sons. And the two oldest ones used to go in with Aaron and officiate in the temple. But they got drunk one day. The fire went out and they lit it and they went in and they were staggering about. They went into the Holy of Holies and God slew them both. And Aaron came, he says, my two boys are dead. And Moses said, you better be careful. And ever after, the high priest wore a bell there, and there were little strings, so in case they dropped dead, they'd pull them out, otherwise everybody would die. And Moses told Aaron, don't start weeping about them. Okay, God's extremely angry, he'd kill us all. And then the other two younger boys took over. Because the two older boys had been killed right there in the Holy of Holies by God. And a similar thing happened with these two archangels. Satan, one who was a covering cherub, and the other, I think, was the Antichrist. Haven't been killed yet, mind you, but they were taken out of action. Gabriel and Michael took their places. Now, Michael, very powerful angel. In fact, his special concern is to look after the people of Israel. All right? He's like Gabriel, just as powerful. In Daniel chapter 10, and I'm working my way through slowly the book of Daniel or writing something on it. In Daniel chapter 10, there is a whole chapter which is referred to as the Great Vision, right? I refer to it as the Great Vision. I'm not going to talk about the Great Vision today because it's such a long chapter. But in this chapter, we see a man in linen. And it describes this man in linen for the first 20-odd verses of Daniel chapter 10. Talks about his hair, talks about his eyes, talks about his face, talks about the color of his skin. And when you turn to Revelation chapter 1, and I've got this all written down, and when the book of Daniel comes out, you'll find I'll be comparing every verse. When you compare the two chapters, Revelation chapter 1 and Daniel chapter 10, you'll see that they're talking about the same person. Both of them have this long priest-like clothing. In Daniel, he's called the man in linen. And those days, the priests wore long garments made of white linen. That was their clothing. So this man is a priest. In fact, he's a high priest. Because later on, he orders Michael to do something. And in both chapters, Daniel and in Revelation, he's clothed down to the feet and he's decorated with the gold of Ophaz. That's a precious place. Some people say it's in the east in India, but anyway, I don't know. His face or his countenance is like lightning, it says in Daniel, and it says shining in its strength. His face, absolutely like the sun. His eyes, one chapter will say, as lamps of fire, and the other one will say, as flames of fire, flame of fire. Spend a bit of time when you go home reading this. His arms and his feet are like polished bronze or polished brass, or in the other one it says like brass burned in a furnace. He's canned. The kind of look you see on Muscle Beach, California, where people spend a fortune trying to look bronze. That's his coloring. His voice, says in Daniel, like the voice of a multitude. And in Revelation, like the voice of many waters. Like a waterfall when he spoke. The effect he has on these two prophets is the minute he comes into their presence, they both collapse. They faint. They're on their forelegs. They're devastated. Other angels can visit people, right? Even Gabriel, I mean, Mary didn't collapse. Zacharias didn't just faint and go in a dead faint. But this man in linen, when they came, and even when he came in the presence of John the Revelator, they just fell like dead people and collapsed. And then he touches them and says, "Don't be scared, don't be scared." And he gets up and says, "Fear not," to both of them. So spend a bit of time reading those two. Daniel chapter 10. Revelation 1. You see that. And in Revelation 1, we are told that this person is Jesus Christ. Because he said, "I am he, the first and the last. I was dead, I'm not alive now." And Daniel 10, it doesn't tell him. Just leaves you. And you can see from Revelation that we are talking in both cases about Jesus Christ. Now he comes to Daniel, who was a captive in Persia, or in Babel. Because the Medes and Persians took over. And there's a thing called levels of authority which apply even in Britain. If a policeman came to your house and said, "I want to search your house," and even if you're a 2-year-old or a 10-year-old, you can say, "Well, where's your warrant? Where's your search warrant? What authority do you have to come and just search my house?" And if he hasn't got it, he'll have to stay outside. So even though he can give you one karate blow and knock you flying, there's certain things they can't do without authority. And this archangel, or this mighty demon, who's called the Prince of Persia, He challenged the man in linen. He says, you can't come down here. This is my territory. Daniel is my captive. So the man in linen sends for Michael. And he stays there till Michael returns to God for the authority for the man in linen to go into Persia and talk to Daniel. Well, that's all chapter 10. And chapter 11 is the prophecy. In fact, it's such a good prophecy, I refer to it as the great vision. Give me a small Bible, this is here. I can barely lift that. Okay. Turn to Daniel chapter 10. Okay. I'll read a few verses. I lifted up mine eyes and looked, and behold, a certain man clothed in linen, whose loins were girded with fine gold of Ophir. His body was like unto the beryl, and his face was the appearance of lightning, and his eyes as lamps of fire, and his arms and his feet like color of polished brass, and his voice of his words like the voice of a multitude. And I, Daniel, alone saw the vision, but the men that were with me saw not the vision, but a great quaking fell upon them, so that they fled to hide themselves. Therefore I was left alone and saw this great vision. Daniel chapter 11. And there remained no strength in me, for my comeliness was turned to me into corruption, and I retained no strength. Yet heard I the voice of his words, and when I heard the voice of his words, then was I in a deep sleep on my face toward the ground. And behold, an hand touched me, which set me upon my knees, and upon my palms of my hands, so I was down on all fours. And he said unto me, O Daniel, a man greatly beloved, understand the words that I speak unto thee, and stand up, for unto thee am I now sent. And when he had spoken this word unto me, I stood trembling. And he said, fear not. Alright? So it's the great vision. In my view, it's as great as Revelation. And the next chapter, chapter 11 and 12, tells about the end of time. I said chapter 11 is the most difficult chapter I've ever read in the Bible. I don't profess to understand every detail, but I'm going to write down what I do understand. All right? So Michael is summoned. And when this prince challenges him, where we are, 21 days, the prince of the kingdom of Persia withstood me 1 and 20 days. This is verse 13 of Daniel 10. For 21 days. And lo, Michael, one of the chief princes, came to help me, and I remained there with the king of Persia. Daniel had been fasting and praying, confessing his sins, and he hadn't had any bread and food for 3 whole weeks, verse 3. So even though the man in linen came down straight away, he could not get to Daniel for 3 weeks. Because this prince of Persia, and it's not talking about an ordinary little prince, an ordinary man. An angel could slaughter 185,000 human beings just like flash light. So they're not frightened. No angel, even the weakest angel, has no problem killing one of us. But this prince of Persia was a high authority. And he challenged the man in linen. You can't come in here. This is my territory. For the time being, anyway. And Michael was dispatched. Alright? Michael, in verse chapter 12, stands up. Says here in Daniel 12, and there, and after that, at that time, shall Michael stand up, the great prince which standeth for the children of thy people. And there shall be a time of trouble such as never was since there was a nation even to that time. And at that time thy people shall be delivered, every one that shall be found written in the book. And many that sleep in the dust of the earth shall awake, some to everlasting life and some to shame and everlasting contempt. So then he gives them various time prophecies. He tells Daniel, he says, you shut up the book, verse 4. Seal the book, even to the time of the end. Many shall run to and fro. That could be a prophecy of travel, vast amounts of people traveling to and fro. Could also mean running to and fro into the book. You know, you can flick through the Bible so fast nowadays, especially if you have a computer program. Everybody has Bibles now. And then I, Daniel, looked, and behold, there stood another two, and one of on this side of the bank of the river, and the other on the other side of the bank of the river. And one said to the man clothed in linen, so this is all the same prophecy, chapter 10, 11, and 12, all the same prophecy. It's the man in linen still there. He said to the man in linen, which was upon the waters of the river, how long shall it be to the end of these wonders? How long is all this going to last? And I heard the man clothed in linen, which was upon the waters of the river, when he held up his right hand and his left hand unto heaven, and he sware by him that liveth forever and ever, that it should be a time, that's 1 year, times 2 years, and half a time, 3.5 years. And when he shall have accomplished to scatter the power of the holy people, all these things shall be finished. I heard, but I understood not. Then I said, Daniel talking, O my Lord. Okay, calls him Lord. And this man in linen actually ordered Michael. O my Lord, Daniel says, what shall be the end of these things? And he said, go thy way, Daniel, for the words are closed and sealed up till the time of the end. In other words, you're not going to understand. Okay, just write it down. Verse 13, but go thy way till the end, for thou shalt rest, in other words, you will die, and stand in thy lot, in other words, you'll be resurrected from your plot of ground at the end of the days. So Daniel writes it all down, doesn't understand it. He just sees the vision, doesn't really know. He asks him a couple of questions. He says, you go, he says. You won't understand what's going to happen anyway. He says, that's how long it's going to be. Write it down. You're going to die. You'll rise. At the end of those days, you'll rise. And Daniel writes that down. So that's another time when Michael is mentioned. The other time, Michael is mentioned in the New Testament in Jude. I better get back to my notes, really. In Jude, okay? In Jude, there's only one chapter in Jude, verse 9. Yet Michael the archangel, when contending with the devil, he disputed about the body of Moses, does not bring against him a railing accusation, but said, the Lord rebuke thee. So when Moses died, he was actually in the land of Moab, you know, he had gone up that mountain. God said, go up the mountain, you're going to die. And when Moses did die, Michael came to claim the body of Moses. Either to bury him in a place nobody would know, otherwise they'd make a shrine of the place and they'd all be worshipping the tombstone and so on. Or to take his body to some place in Israel. Like Joseph, when he died, he said, don't you leave me here, all right? Take my bones back to Israel. So we don't know where Moses is actually buried. But there was a dispute over his body. The devil said, hey, he belongs here, right? And Michael said to him, he did not sort of accuse him and go into a ranting rage. He said, the Lord rebuke thee. Implying that Michael is not the Lord. Because the Lord, Jesus Christ, rebuked Satan many, many times. He said, get behind me, get out of him, don't bother him, come back here again, and so on. So in the Old New Testament, you find the Lord rebuked Satan over and over and over again, but Michael wouldn't rebuke Satan. He said, the Lord rebuked him. So some churches believe that Michael is Jesus Christ. He's not Jesus Christ. He's an archangel. Now, what about future events? How does this apply to us? Now these two archangels who go with God whenever travel the universe, when things of great importance take place, or a message of great importance like the birth of Jesus, wow, Gabriel sent to tell Mary, birth of John the Baptist, the prophecy is about the end, Michael is sent, right? The burial of Moses, these two are sent. How does that concern us? Well, it concerns us in this respect. I want you for a little while to get to a higher level. On the lower level, we're talking about the birth of John the Baptist, right? Just being born and his message. But Jesus said that John was the Elijah. That the things John was saying was actually the Elijah message. Jesus said that he will go in the power of Elijah and he will preach before the coming of the Messiah, which John did. He was not just little John the Baptist. He was a fulfillment of a prophecy. And he was preaching the Elijah message. And on a higher level still, we who preach the Elijah message, right, are like John. And we're not talking about the first coming of Jesus Christ. We're preaching it just before the second coming of Jesus Christ. On a low level, Michael disputed the body of Moses. On a higher level, Michael defends the body of people who actually love and obey the laws God gave through Moses. Now this body of people, right, Satan wants to not only kill, but keep dead. And Michael defends them. Michael will defend. He'll stand up and fight. There's going to be a war in heaven. In Revelation it says there was war in heaven. Michael and his angels fought with the devil and his angels. And the devil was thrown out of heaven. This is in Revelation chapter 12. Let's read it to you. Okay. There was Revelation 12:7. There was war in heaven. Michael and his angels fought against the dragon. The dragon is the devil, Satan. And the dragon fought and his angels and prevailed not, neither was their place found any more in heaven. And the great dragon was cast out, that old serpent called the devil and Satan, which deceived the whole world. He was cast out into the earth. And his angels were cast out with him. So the devil was thrown out of heaven. Now, Michael didn't sit back in heaven and say, well, that's got, we got rid of him. And now we can sit back in peace. He pursues him. Because he knows that the devil is after a certain group down there. It says there, and the devil, the great dragon, was cast out, right? Verse 12, therefore rejoice ye heavens and ye that dwell in them. Woe to the inhabitants of the earth and the sea. For the devil has come down upon you, unto you, having great wrath, because he knoweth that he hath but a short time. All right? So the devil comes down, and his particular attention is on the saints, particularly the body who keep the commandments. And Michael defends the body who keeps the commandments. The people, the body who, as it were, respects the laws given through Moses by God. The devil, as you know, at Christ's return, is put in the abyss, shut up for 1,000 years. So when Christ rules for 1,000 years, the devil is not going to be around to tempt anyone. There's going to be peace, because many of the angels are dead. The devil and his host, the devil is in the abyss. But at the end of the 1,000 years, that Satan shall be loosed out of his prison, Revelation 20, verse 7. And he shall go out to deceive the nations which are in the four quarters of the earth, Gog and Magog, Revelation 20, verse 8. To gather them to battle, the number of whom is of the sand of the sea. Everybody who's ever lived will be alive then. The saints will be alive. All the wicked people will be alive. Devil running around telling them, see, I've brought you up from your graves. In this little crowd, we outnumber them 1,000 to 1. We can soon take them over. And they went up, verse 9, on the breadth of the earth, and compassed the camp of the saints about, and the beloved city, and fire came down from God out of heaven and devoured them. So God doesn't have to put up a fight with Satan like Michael did. God could vaporize Satan with one word. Christ doesn't have to fight with Michael, with Satan, as Michael and the angels did. He could just speak the word and they're dead. So here we are. We are living in these times when these two angels, all right, are going to come down to earth. Now the chapter David read is that two witnesses come to the city of Jerusalem. Jerusalem is going to be captured, by the way, all right? Arabs want Jerusalem. They're going to take it over. There's going to be a big slaughter of Israelites there too. And into the city, which is called Sodom, spiritually called Sodom, and spiritually called Egypt, where our Lord was crucified, and that's where he was crucified, in the city of Jerusalem, or just outside it. The only two witnessing against them will be these two witnesses. Human beings can't fight them, because if anybody tries to fight them, they can bring a plague or fire and burn in their bits to ashes. They can call down fire from heaven, they can cause a drought, they can call any plague they please. And for 42 months, they terrorize the world. No matter who tries to go with them, they just die. And then the Antichrist, who's another archangel, who's been in the abyss for a long time, when he's released from the abyss, he's powerful enough to kill these two. That he's the only one able to do it. Satan and him. Why? Because actually they were covering cherubs before Michael and Gabriel. And they kill the two witnesses. A lot of people think the two witnesses are men. They're not men at all. Because men couldn't do the things that the two witnesses do. They call fire down from heaven. They cause plagues. They can... And the whole world is cowed by their testimony. And then they're killed by the beast. And for 3.5 days, their bodies are exposed. People see angels. And then God raises them from the dead. Just come up here. And that's the end of the second war of Revelation. It hasn't happened yet. Alright, I've got a little notes here. The body of Moses is more than his physical corpse and where it should be buried. The body of Moses represents the body of believers who love the law of the Almighty given through Moses. The rebuilding of Jerusalem, which you know he was given a rod to measure the city and so, means far more than the building of houses, streets and shops. Jerusalem or Zion represents Jehovah's capital and the special believers who alone are allowed to inhabit it. Some people are not allowed to enter Jerusalem. It's not talking about this little one down here. The message of John the Baptist is the Elijah message, an end time calling back of to people to obedience and holiness. The coming of the Messiah looks beyond the Savior's birth in Bethlehem to his second coming in power and glory. And the 2,300 days and the other 1,260 and 1,335 and so on, they refer to the end. And when they finish, the resurrection will take place. Now, we know that there are ET visitors. People are going to say, well, these are visitors who come in spacecraft. Hundreds and hundreds of websites devoted only to UFOs. If you search UFO, you get hundreds of websites. But these websites really, or these UFOs, are not visitors from other planets. They're evil angels posing as ET travelers. Posing as angel, as other intelligences. And we are to be aware, what we should be waiting for is that for the arrival of these two witnesses in Jerusalem, when they come, we'll know we're very close.